What? He's saying there's a correlation between being left-wing and being low in agreeableness and low in conscientiousness. That can't possibly be right. I'm left-wing, which is the only possible thing that any moral and good person can be. And I'm brilliant. I'm perfect. I'm wonderful. I'm just a really, really nice person. And anyone disagrees with me is a shitty person. That can't be right. I'll show him. Source? Yeah, that'll show him. I bet he can't find a source. And I bet even if it is a source, it's not a very good source. I bet it's the Daily Mail. Sorry, Daily Fail or something. And anyway, correlation doesn't equal causation. That's like basic statistics. Anyone that knows that, particularly if you do a degree in feminist studies like I've done, anyone knows correlation doesn't equal causation. Yeah, that'll show him. That'll show him the Nazi in all caps. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to look at what I call, well, the most common midwit arguments, the most common arguments of the academic poser who has an IQ of about 115 but thinks that they're much more intelligent, that I receive on this channel. I think they're really worth looking into and really worth understanding, the most common midwit arguments and what they mean. Now, the first of these is simply the argument put in under the video or whatever of source, question mark, demanding a source. Well, what is this argument? All you have to do, if you want to know the source of what I have said, is Google the keywords I have used, and you will almost certainly, within seconds, find the source. Often I will name the paper that I am talking about. And even if I haven't, the key words that will lead you to the paper very quickly, or you could simply find one of my books and track down the paper. So the fact that you have said source is a cope. It is as if you're saying, okay, I don't like what this individual is saying. I don't like what he's arguing. So I'll demand a source, and he won't respond to me. Obviously, he won't bother responding to me, and therefore I can reassure myself. I can say to myself, well, the fact that he hasn't given me a source proves that he's wrong. The fact that he hasn't given me a source proves that he doesn't have a source, and therefore the cognitive dissonance that I've experienced, the experience of feeling that what is being asserted about the world is not what I desire to be true about the world, is not what is not a model of the world which makes me feel good and makes me feel morally superior, makes me feel important. That model of the world hasn't been challenged because he hasn't been able to come up with a source, and therefore I've insulated myself. I've asked for a source, he hasn't given me a source, and therefore he's wrong, and therefore I can feel better about myself. That's the nature of asking for a source. It's a way of insulating oneself psychologically against findings which one doesn't like. Or it's simply an expression of just being really, really lazy. Okay, so that's source. The second thing then is all caps. Now, the use of all caps in an argument is just... Obviously, it's a kind of... expressive fallacy, shall we say. What you are one of the informal fallacies in philosophy is appeal to emotion. So if you use emotion in your argument, then you're basically attempting to shut the other person down. You're attempting to intimidate your interlocutor into silence. You're attempting to or manipulate them into silence via your expression of emotion. You've made me cry. You've made me cry. Stop talking. You're being mean. You've made me cry. Well, that's what CAPS is doing. It's emphasising the emotion of the interlocutor as a means of trying to intimidate people into not counter-arguing. Now, of course, it's something that you would do in real life via shouting, via raising your voice or whatever, and it's something that you do online via caps. You say, there is definitely not a capital N, capital O, capital T, a relationship between intelligence and, political orientation. That is clearly nonsense. You have no idea what you're talking about. It makes the person feel better to express the emotion. It gets out of their system how they feel, and there is an unconscious sort of idea that you are intimidating the other person, that you are spreading a bit of anger, you are making them feel that, oh, maybe they should back down, and you are hoping that they'll just go away and shut up and stop saying things which challenge you and stop saying things which cause cognitive dissonance, thus permitting a bit of cognitive consonance to occur. That's caps lock. The next is with regard to talking about averages. So if you make an assertion such as, on average, people that are left-wing are less agreeable and less conscientious than people that are right-wing, then the a counter-argument to that is to say, oh, well, I know some people that are left-wing that are very, very kind and very, very nice. Now, why would you make that counter-argument? Well, there are two reasons why you would make that counter-argument. The first is simply, it's not even a midwit argument, it's just that you have low IQ, that a person does not understand the nature of averages. A person does not understand abstract thought. And so they engage in what you call in philosophy an appeal to anecdote. I happen to know someone that is like this. And they feel that that's a counter-argument because they're just too stupid to understand abstract thought. The second, what we might call the more midwit argument, is that in most circumstances, these kinds of people would indeed understand abstract thought and understand averages. But when you are highly emotionally invested in something, when it's a big part of your identity and your sense of self, and therefore of something which makes you feel important and worthwhile in the world, then your thought, your logical processes can be clouded. And for emotional reasons, fallacious arguments, which you otherwise wouldn't use in other circumstances, can become attractive. Your reason, as it were, can be overwhelmed by your emotion. So in those circumstances, a person who is left-wing and it's a big part of their identity and they don't like the idea that left-wing people are less kind than right-wing people will be attracted to ideas such as, well, that can't be right, it can't be right. I've met people all the people I know that are left-wing are really nice, all the people I know that are right-wing are really nasty, and therefore it's nonsense. And that on any other circumstance, that person would know that was a fallacy and that was an appeal to anecdote. But in these circumstances, they're so overwhelmed by emotion that they're able to convince themselves, no, my anecdote is so overwhelming. My personal evidence is so massive that it overwhelms these studies. And they might also then sort of start finding copes with regard to the nature of the state. Ah, well, what's the sample size? What's the level of statistical significance? Blah, 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 blah. You know, some other way of trying to permit themselves to maintain a positive self-image in the face of something they don't like. Which brings me on to the next midwit argument, which is to say correlation doesn't equal causation, which is, it's just the most stupid, banal statement. Correlation doesn't equal causation. That a person who has no understanding of statistics or anything like that, the one thing they have learnt, the one thing they do know, is the correlation doesn't equal causation. Now, in most circumstances, if they were presented with a correlational relationship that on a reasonable sample that was statistically significant, they would never dream of saying correlation doesn't equal causation. It would be a proof for them of their viewpoint. But in a set of circumstances in which they don't like what they're finding, then they will assert that correlation doesn't equal causation. But of course, no, it doesn't. Obviously, it doesn't. Correlation does not equal causation. No. But it is likely to if you can come up with a plausible theory that would explain why the relationship exists. And you can, of course, go further than that, and you can compare different theories, and you could engage in statistical modelling to see which is the most probable theory. But certainly, if you find a correlation between two variables, and you find a reasonable, parsimonious theory as to why it would exist, then although correlation doesn't equal causation, it is likely to equal causation in that set of circumstances. So the fact then that you just continue saying correlation doesn't equal causation simply implies that you don't like what you're finding, what you're hearing. So again, it's an example of cognitive dissonance. It's an example of seeing something which does not fit with about the nature of the world, which does not fit with how you want the world to be. And so you simply assert correlation doesn't equal causation, and therefore that's it, and ignore any comebacks from your interlocutor, and therefore you can reassure yourself that actually, no, it's just some statistical blip, there's just some problem with the data, there's just something, and that's why this relationship exists, which you don't like, and therefore you can move on, and you can carry on with having your high sense of self-esteem. The next that they will engage in is just appeal to insult. Now, again, this is something which I noticed with the Andrew Tate video, which I put up recently. normally a person with a reasonable intelligence would understand that appeal to insult, it's just like using caps lock or whatever. It's a way of shutting down your interlocutor. It's a way of engaging in emotion or whatever. It's not a logical argument. But if you are completely overwhelmed by your feelings, then it just happens, and you don't really realize it, and you use it and you really do genuinely think that it's a reasonable thing to do. I find this a lot with Adam Rutherford, debating with him on Twitter, that you just get a series of fallacies. So you will have appeal to insult. You know, I mean, you'll say something like, "Oh, look at you sitting in your mum's cellar." That's what I get a lot. I mean, it's not my mum's cellar, but my mum's house doesn't have a cellar. But you're sitting there in your mum's cellar with, "Oh, look at you with your crap wardrobe. What are you, poor or something? Why is that? Why you don't like Andrew Tate? Is that why you're having to go at Andrew Tate?" These kinds of arguments, appeal to insult, appeal ad hominem. And this is, of course, what the midwit has to do, because he can't come up with a logical counter argument. He can't come up with a logical argument which allows him to maintain this sense of positive identity. And so, therefore, he has to engage in appeal to insult. And there are many informal fallacies like this. And I mean, another one, obviously, is appeal to authority. So to say, "Oh, well, look, so and so says this, and so and so has a doctorate in the related subject." I mean, so what? The fact that someone has a doctorate in theology and Richard Dawkins, who has a doctorate in biology, criticises him, that's a meaningless argument. "Oh, well, look, Richard Dawkins doesn't know anything about theology. He doesn't have a doctorate in theology." What utter tosh. An argument's either logical or it's not logical. It doesn't matter who makes the argument. It doesn't matter what qualifications they've got. The argument, based on reading the available evidence and whatever, is either logical or it's not logical. It's an objective fact. An argument is either reasonable or it is not reasonable. It's completely irrelevant who makes it. Now, you might argue that a person with a certain level of education in a field or whatever might be more likely to understand all of the variables involved. Well, yeah, that is true. But you don't. You can either get those understand those variables by looking into it and researching it in a lot of detail independently, which, as of course people get older, they are much more likely to move outside the field in which they have been narrowly trained when they're young and look at all kinds of things. And indeed, most of the innovations that are made in most subjects are made, and there's a, again, Google the study. I mean, you're going to say source, I'll give you a clue, Dean K. Simonton. Most of the innovations that are made in most subjects are made by people that have trained in another subject, and that's because they are able to look at this new subject from an outsider perspective. They don't have a kind of home blindness, as it were, and they see connections which those that are trained in the subject don't make. So most of the great innovations that are made in any given subject are made usually by people that are trained in another subject. The great, serious, major innovations. So it's just no argument whatsoever, and it's a way of coping with things which you've heard which you don't like. So this is appeal to authority, appeal to insult, anything like this. I once heard Adam Rutherford accuse me, because I talked about fallacies, of engaging in the fallacy fallacy. He said, "Your use of talking about me having using fallacies is the fallacy fallacy." But that's just the fallacy almost of, well, that's not even a fallacy, that's just being wrong. Because the fallacy fallacy is not that you use the fallacy argument incorrect a lot, the fallacy fallacy. The fallacy fallacy is that you assume that because the arguments that are used to substantiate an assertion are fallacious, therefore the assertion is wrong. That's the fallacy fallacy. So if I say to you, I don't know, the world is definitely round, scientists say so, right? That's a fallacy. That's a fallacy. Now, if I then say, "Well, no, that's your argument. Scientists say the world is round, and therefore the world is round." No, it can't be. It must be flat. That's the fallacy fallacy, because the fact that the argument that has been used is fallacious does not mean that the assertion is necessarily wrong. But anyway, all of these different fallacies, that's what you get. And finally, I'll just add a final one. Well, it's very similar. It's very similar to the demanding a source, really. Link, question mark, link. Now, of course, what you're saying, question mark, often exclamation mark as well. Now, what you're saying with that is, "I don't agree." It's this emotional way of expressing things, often in capital letters. "I don't agree with what you're saying. I'm not going to agree with what you're saying. I'm prejudiced against what you're saying, and I don't expect you to give me a link, and therefore you won't. And therefore, I have by doing that and by you not responding, I have insulated myself against this information which I don't like to hear, and therefore I feel better, and therefore I have cognitive consonance rather than cognitive dissonance. So those are the key midwit arguments. And since I started doing a quick pint, which has involved a much more engagement than it used to involve, I have seen these again and again. So I thought I would draw attention to them. Okay, I hope this is a bit of interest, and I will see you all soon. And goodbye!
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you can also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!